loving on the wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind him switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. But when they're running down our countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a way of life, or fighting and it fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country horse, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program. Here on LightResistanceRadio.com, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people, the Dominion of Canada, and the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. I'm going to play a great program I recorded earlier this week, of course, with the our chief host, William Johnson of the American Freedom Party, and myself, Paul Fromm, our producer and coordinator, Ken Givenden, and we hit a number of interesting topics, including the persecution here in Canada of Kevin Goodrow by a longtime anti-free speech fanatic, Richard Warren, the Ethnostate. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the funny side of me.
Hello, everyone. This is William Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, here with another edition of the Ethnostate with our regulars, Ken Givenden and Paul Fromm. Paul, just before we went on the air, you said that you might be able to make it, you might not be able to make it because of an ongoing political, I guess, political motivated litigation. What's going on in that arena?
Yes, wearing my hat as the director of the Canadian Association for Free Expression, I went up to our nation's capital in Ottawa to assist a white nationalist activist with a court case.
Did you say free expression?
Yes.
Okay, all right, go on.
Right. It's in short supply in Canada. So the situation was this: an anti-racist activist, troublemaker, enemy of freedom, named Richard Warren, was trying to get a peace bond on this fellow. Now, I think you probably have the same thing in the States, but a peace bond is you either agree to sign it or the court imposes it on you, and it means for the next year. Usually it's to, you know, that you will not go near that particular person. And in some cases, there might be a couple of other requirements.
It's, now, let me stop you. Would this be what we would call a restraining order?
Yeah, it's a restraining order. And if you violate it, then you've broken the law and you can go to jail. It's usually used in situations of marital breakup where there's been, somebody being beaten and this type of thing. So it's usually used to enjoin one party to, let's say, keep 100 yards away from the other person's residence or business or whatever. But what Warman wanted to do is he wanted this fellow named Kevin Goudreau, he wanted a peace bond, a restraining order on him, not to communicate in any way with him, Richard Warman, or other executive members of a group called the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, or to come near any of their meetings, or to possess weapons, or to consume alcohol for the next year. Now, normally these peace bonds or restraining orders are only granted where there's good reason to believe that the person will do violence to the other person.
Yeah, there has to be threats of violence, right?
Yes, there has to be threats of violence and some evidence that, you know, there's been antagonism. Well, Mr. Goudreau had never been in touch with Mr. Warman, had no idea where Mr. Warman lived, had never emailed him or phoned him or faxed him or even written much about him. And you see, Warman is trying this new tactic to restrain and harass activists because, we don't know if the judge would have granted it, but we don't even know all the members of this particular Canadian anti-hate network. And not to communicate with them, it might be impossible to actually obey that. If you don't have a list of who the members are, you might be communicating with somebody you shouldn't communicate with. But this is a form of restraint and harassment. And Warman is a person who has done all sorts of vile things over the years. He filed 30 different complaints under an old law that harassed a lot of patriots who had websites. Now that law got repealed, but a lot of people were fined. A lot of people had had lifetime cease and desist orders. More recently, Warman called Children's Aid Services against one of my friends who was going through a so-called hate trial. Warman never been to this guy's house, had no knowledge of the fellow's child. And this was just vile harassment, because parents, the one thing worse than perhaps having a child die is, you know, have a child taken away, and Child Protective Services have broad powers. Well, they investigated, and the Dr. Sears was free and clear. But this is the type of legal terrorism that this professional meddler, Richard Warman, has engaged in. Well, I could go on for a long time about the things he's done, but so we went to court this morning, all ready to fight. Oh yeah, another thing is that Warman, unbeknownst to Mr. Goudreau, had over the past 5 years filed five different complaints with two different police forces trying to get Mr. Goudreau charged for hate. And in every case, the police force declined to charge. I mean, there just are no grounds there. So if anybody actually needs a restraining order, Mr. Goudreau needs it against this professional anti-racist troublemaker. So when we got to court, though, as so often happens in our protracted legal system, it was anticlimactic. It was a rainy morning, and we expected drama, but there was no drama. It was simply simply remanded to a date in August.
But now let me just interject something. In California, if you file for a restraining order and you lose, then the other party can get attorney's fees. And usually, you can only get attorney's fees if it's written in a contract or if it's set by statute. And so you can get restraining order legal fees if you file it and you prevail against the other party. Is that not the same in Canada, I wonder?
I am not sure. In civil litigation, yes. If I sue you for libel and I lose, I'm on the hook for your legal fees. plus my own lawyer's fees.
See, that's not the same in America. In America, if you sue for slander and you win or you lose, you don't get legal fees anyway. But for restraining orders, there is a legal fee. So if that does exist, then Goudreau might be able to get some of his fees if he ultimately prevails.
Well, I am going to talk to some of our legal friends about that. What we were going to do is go through Mr. Gorman's affidavit, where, I mean, it's less an affidavit than a rant. It's neo-Nazi this, neo-Nazi that, neo-Nazi something else. And basically, we were going to point out the fact that he is a professional troublemaker. He's the type of nasty neighborhood bully kid who passes a dog, and there's a chainmail fence. He takes a stick and he pokes the dog, and then when the dog starts barking, he demands that the master chain the poor dog up.
I want to delve into his psyche a little bit. What's his background? Why did he come about this? Is he just your typical baby boomer white guy that thinks he's on a crusade, or what's going on?
Well, he's a crusader, and he's been at this for 20 years. It's a very good question. I mean, what motivates this guy? He goes through tons of money hiring lawyers to harass people. And one of the many cases I was involved in, my guy's Chinese lawyer asked him, and probably only a non-white could get away with this, "Mr. Warman, are you a Jew?"
And?
Yes. He says, "I am not of the Jewish faith." Now, is this just a lawyer who can never give a straight answer, who can never answer with one word what he can use 10 to do? But we had to wonder whether this was a devious answer. Does this mean he's not a practicing religious Jew, but he's an ethnic Jew? Don't know. But that was the closest we ever came to getting that question answered. But he is driven. I mean, he is the definition of a fanatic. And here's a good example. Most fanatics have no sense of humor. And there was a human rights tribunal where I was defending one of the victims, a guy named it's been so long. Anyway, it was Western Canada for Us group. And at the end of the proceedings, the lawyer for the Canadian Human Rights Commission gave his summation, and he was a fellow who didn't speak very good English, believe it or not, but he told a joke. Okay, then it was my turn on behalf of the defense, and I started off my presentation with a joke. Then Warman, because he was the complainant, also got a chance to make a presentation, a summation. So he starts off with, "Madam Chair, I have no levity," and then starts his. Now, who essentially says, "I have no sense of humor"? I mean, if you actually don't want to tell a joke or you don't have a sense of humor, just launch into your, whatever it is you have to say. I thought, what person actually would say, "I have no levity," or a highfalutin way of saying, "I have no sense of humor"?
Well, just while you were talking, I looked on Wikipedia to see about him. There's a picture of him, and he looks 100% German to me, and he said in the Wikipedia that he's not German. So I think he's just one of these self-hating white people. Or I think his psyche might be thinks that what he's doing is moral and righteous, and he's just got his views skewed from the way he's been raised. So I think there's a lot of those people in this world where they are one of us in genetic makeup, but they're the polar opposite when it comes to their outlook on politics and society.
Well, you may be right. He has a long history of closely working with the Jewish lobby groups. I'm going to say about a dozen years ago, he wrote that year's edition of an annual pamphlet, of a report put out by the League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith, and it's called the B'nai B'rith Annual Audit of Anti-Semitic Incidents. Now, that sounds pretty lofty. It is not a list of convictions. It's a list of reports of anti-Semitic incidents, whatever that is. And even one of the other Jewish lobby groups, leaders of a fellow named Bernie Farber, once joked, "Well, of course, the report always reports things are worse than last year. The numbers are up significantly." He said, "If the neighborhood, activist, let's say. He used
what does Paul, what is this guy's name again? I'm going to see if I can find
Richard Warman, W-A-R-M-A-N.
Yeah.
Now, he looks like The Walking Dead.
You know, he's kind of bald, but he's very fair. And he looks like he's quite German in mindset and outlook. I mean, but the thing is, there's a lot of our people that are this way. There are millions of them. Like, I just saw an article today where the courts in Finland ruled that child, having sex with a child is not rape if you come from a culture where that's acceptable. So what kind of mindset has enveloped our people that they would rule like that way in Finland, or that they would take up the crusade that Mr. Warman has taken up, that is totally opposite of sound reason? It's got to be that the indoctrination that happened when they were children, whether it's Finnish indoctrination or Canadian indoctrination or American indoctrination, that they think what they're doing is either the popular thing or the right thing, the moral thing, or whatever. It's just inscrutable to me.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I think this is a particular case. I think it goes beyond white guilt or even the fanatic feeling really good about being an anti-racist. That it goes beyond that. But there's some things I can't.
Well, last week I was in Utah, and I was in Provo and in Salt Lake City. In Provo, which is a little college town, and all traditionally it was 100% white. Well, I walked around in there, and although there was a lot of beautiful white families with young, beautiful white children, there was just a flood of non-whites and interracial couples that were just flooding into that area. And I went to Salt Lake City, and I met with my brother, and we were walking there, and we were waiting for his wife and his son, and off in the distance, a couple were coming, and he asked, well, is that, he couldn't see them, and then I said, well, is that my wife and son? I said, no, that's a mixed race couple. And he goes, he was all disgusted that I would even point out the facts that there's a mixed race couple. And we were, my brother and I were raised in the same household, and from day one, he was indoctrinated the same way I was. Our parents at home taught us what I believe in, and the schools taught us not as extreme as it is now, but it taught the other direction. And he was just embracing these left-wing causes from early on, and he's never changed. So I think, but he is a type of person that always wants to be popular. He wants to have accolades from society. And so I think because our views traditionally have been looked down upon by establishment and by the media, that he has embraced that wholeheartedly. And so I think that I don't blame the defects of our society on anything but our own people, because we have embraced this messed up philosophy that Richard Warman et al. Has embraced. And I mean, you can admire Richard Warman for his zeal, but you can hate him for the side that he's on.
And the lives he's ruined. Well, yeah. I'll tell you another story that backs up your analysis. A good friend of mine is a longtime outspoken working guy who's had trouble with the Canadian legal system. He's been to jail under the so-called hate law. And his name's Brad Love. And Brad is a working guy up in Fort McMurray. And he has had a lot of trouble with the law. And he says, the person who's going to denounce me to the police is a fellow white man. The legal aid attorney that they will appoint and I will not accept will be a white woman. The prosecuting attorney, we call him the crown attorney, will be a white woman. The judge will probably be a white man or a white woman. And when I'm convicted, the sheriffs will take me off the prison, or the marshals will take me off the prison, will be white. He says, I can handle the Jews. He used a different word for blacks. I can handle the Jews and the blacks. It's whites I can't handle.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The persecution that has come leveled against me has all come from white people. So that's what we're having to deal with.
When the anti-racist action gang attacked my residence in 2006, there were about 25 of them. Of 25, only one was a visible minority. One was black. And The rest were white or Jews, but I mean, they were whites. It wasn't Hispanics or blacks or Chinese that were causing me trouble.
I know. But now on the flip side of this is I recently met with a black man who is very successful, and he thinks exactly like we do. And he's successful in a way that you don't normally find a successful black man. He started his own business and made it very successful. In that what he does is he sells insurance, or he finds insurance for medical practitioners who have had medical malpractice claims, and they're not traditionally insurable. And so he's got thousands and thousands of doctors who need to have medical malpractice insurance, and they can't get it. So he comes in, and he's got his network, and so he's got a very successful business catering to a segment of the medical profession that has problems. Some of them, they just use him for a few years, and they move on. He says, one guy has used me for 20 years. He's still got a license of practice, but he can't get medical insurance, and they have to pay through the nose. But the point I want to make is that we are very successful, and we sit there, and I talk there, and he is as extreme as you can get. And so he was telling me all of his connections, and because he's black, he can have such mainstream connections with people that won't contact, they won't speak with us, you know. And so I thought, well, gee, I'd like to get some of those connections. I'd like to meet some of those connections. So I just today, actually, this morning, I sent him an email and says that, Donald Trump needs to appoint a Secretary of Agriculture who will stop all the food stamps and free handouts. This will force a great change in America and will make people more responsible or they won't survive. After Donald Trump gets reelected in 2020, I would like to push to have the president appoint someone who thinks like us, maybe me, you know, or someone like me to stand firm and cancel all the safety net food stamp programs.
Well, I wonder, Bill, if this is the type of guy who would want to be on the show.
Oh, absolutely. I'll ask him. But this is what he wrote back to me today. He says, Bill, I do agree, as I was in Walmart and the people in line have more food than we do. And this is the same true of Whole Foods. Reagan is right. Those who work should live better than those who don't. And then, let's see. What you're saying is a great idea. I'll ask Babe Buchanan first. The collapse of America can be rushed by bigger social programs and giveaways. The liberals are smart. Walmart receives more than 50% of their revenue in some locations by transfer payments. And what he means by that is welfare. And that's true for Target and other stores. The cultural communists are always ahead of us.
Jeez.
And so I thought, he's right on board with this. And then he says, oh, on another note, have you read The Dispossessed Majority by Wilmot Robinson, written in 1982? That book was right on target, and the liberals hated him. And one of my all-time favorites is the other one, is The Culture of Critique, Kevin MacDonald. You read this guy, and you would not expect that he is a tall, tall, stately-looking black man. But so you've got, I imagine that these other ghetto blacks will be saying the same thing about him that we're saying about Richard Horman. So, you know, maybe our position, you know, makes for strange bedfellows. But he's going out on a limb. He's going to use all of his contacts. And he says, I will do everything in my power to get you an audience to see if we can make this happen. You know, and I'm sure his connections are not that great, but it's better than my connections. And we do these kind of things and something's going to come through. But the point I want to make is that we have some allies here that we don't traditionally recognize. And then, Ken, I'll go ahead and ask him if he wants to appear on the show.
Yeah, please do. And by the way, maybe Kevin would want to come on.
Oh, with him, that's a good idea. Yeah, if this guy agrees, then I'll talk to Kevin. We'll have a love fest among all of us.
Yeah, well, with or without him, I think Kevin would be a good guy.
I think it would be better to feature Kevin MacDonald by himself, and then this black man by himself or with somebody else. But Kevin MacDonald is such a heavyweight and so important.
Okay.
He should be the focus of the show.
Very good. Okay, and then before we get into the topics at hand, there's one topic that has come to my mind that we need to discuss. It's that we talk a lot about race, but we also talk about the moral decay that we're seeing. The first article that I want to talk about, or the first topic, isn't an article that Ken sent around, but I'd like to get your take on it. And it's been going around on the internet now for a couple of days now. The first one, and those two topics are related, it says that the recent Teen Vogue magazine, and is what is Vogue magazine, is a magazine for style and dress and clothing, and Teen Vogue, I assume what it means, is directed for a teenage audience. And they had two recent articles that just appalled me. One of them was called Why Sex Work is Real Work. And it was giving a whole presentation to these teenagers why it's good to be involved in the sex, or why it's legitimate to be involved in the sex trade.
That prostitution drink, one of them.
Yeah. And the other one, it gave, it talked about an article about what you should know about, and I'm even ashamed to even mention this, because it's so outside of my concepts. It says, what you need to know about anal sex. This is for Teen Vogue. It just boggles my mind at what type of perversity we have degenerated into. And that's just two simple examples from a single teenage magazine. What do you guys take on this? Where have we headed? How much farther can we go?
Oh, go ahead, Paul.
Well, I thought with your background, you'd want to strike at it first. Well, I think this is part of a deliberate plan to poison and degenerate our society as fast as possible. The topics are preposterous. Perhaps for an adult publication, we've got to assume teens are, for the most part, younger than the major age of majority. I think those topics are outrageous. If adults want to debate the legitimacy of prostitution, I guess they can do so. I think it's a kind of a beaten to death topic, and on the topic of anal sex, well, again, that's an adult topic. Assuming it really interests anybody.
Yeah, but what my wife had commented, not on this particular story, but in general, that she was listening to some sort of pastor speak, a religious leader who has a strong belief in the dualism of good and bad and Satan and godly powers. And he's saying that Satan won't attack us by going after our cultural things. He will attack us by making that which is absolutely abhorrent seem normal, natural, and acceptable. And that's exactly what this Teen Vogue article is doing. They are legitimizing really some of the most outrageous and insane concepts imaginable. I mean, taking the sanctity of procreation and throwing it in these two messed up concepts. It's just, I don't know how much lower we can go.
Let me read just a couple sentences from the article. The writer says, I find it interesting that as a medical doctor, I exchange payment in the form of money with people to provide them with advice and treatment for sex-related problems, therapy for sexual performance, counseling, and therapy for relationship problems and treatment of sexually transmitted infection. Then he says, isn't this basically sex work? I do not believe it is right or just that people who exchange sexual services for money are criminalized, and I am not for what I do. So it seems to me that what this guy is doing is he is saying the prostitution is effectively on a par with medical doctor who gives counseling for people who have sex-related diseases and other complications. Well, when I read this stuff, guys, you know, you just wonder, first of all, where is this guy coming from? And secondly, why would Vogue, Teen Vogue, publish such nonsense? But yes, because we talk about it. I don't know.
Several people have observed recently that the fascination with the transgendered and transgender rights and so on reminds us of the degeneracy of the Weimar Republic. That, I mean, people perhaps don't remember that Weimar was about as crazy and radical as some of we are today. There were open sex shows, clubs for homosexuals. There was a lot of transgenderism, there's a lesbian writer, but she's actually fairly conservative. Her name is Camille Paglia, and she's an anthropologist by profession, and she's written a book, and she contends that you know that an empire is about to crash when there's widespread transgenderism and acceptance of it. Now, I don't know if she, I haven't read it, so I haven't seen the evidence of everything, but certainly we can imagine the Roman Empire was in a state like that. Because when you can't even get human sexuality right, you know, marriage is a man and a woman, not two men and two women, or a man and a goat, it's a man and a woman. When you can't even get the basics right, then you're going to get other things wrong, you know, like the problems we have in Canada and the United States with the border. I mean, it's elementary. Illegals are illegals. Deport them. Build a wall. If the wall doesn't work, build a minefield, you know, but whatever. You protect your border. But the fact that that's even debatable today shows just how mentally degenerate we've become. And I think part of you know, part of that pattern is what you're discussing about in Teen Vogue, in my opinion.
Yeah. There was a story, Paul, in theatlantic.com, and it says for more than 30 years, the critic Camille Paglia has taught at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia. Now, a fraction of art school censors want her fired.
Yes.
For sharing wrong opinions on matters of sex, gender identity, and sexual assault. So she needs to be fired. But this other guy who writes for Vogue magazine, he's perfectly okay. In fact, he's to be encouraged.
The LGBTQ, et cetera, et cetera, crowd hate her. They just hate Camille Paglia. We had an interesting incident up in Canada. There's a person named Jen Smith. Now, you may think Jen Smith is a woman. Jen Smith is actually a man who thinks he's a woman. But he was he gave two lectures recently that were disrupted by the LGBTQ crowd because he believes the this individual, Jen Smith, believes that transgenderism is a form of mental illness, and that radical sex ed programs that promote transgenderism and so on, gender fluidity, etc., are wrong. So because he takes this strong moral stand, they hate him. They made a wreck of his lecture in Victoria, British Columbia about 2 weeks ago, and he was at the University of British Columbia on Sunday. There were huge efforts to shut him down. They came in, they pulled the fire alarm, they blew whistles, they screamed and yelled, but there were enough, you know, Christians and conservative people in the audience that in the end got to give his present. It's actually not just a speech, it's a great slide presentation. My videographer friend Brian Rue was there. Might be some of you, you know, just out of personal interest, you might want to Google Jen with two N's, Jen Smith, a transgendered person who thinks transgenderism is mental illness.
Well, I just, it's not just our two countries. Every white country has embraced this self-destructive concept, this some misguided belief. Like, I was just looking on YouTube today, and there was a kid in Edinburgh, Scotland, who was in high school or whatever, and they kicked him out because he says that there's only two genders. The teacher says that there's all sorts of genders, and you can have all sorts of a variety of sexual orientation, but more than orientation, gender. And this kid says, no, there's only two genders. And of course, I think you should say only two sexes. Gender to me is a grammatical term. But instead of saying only two sexes, he said there's only two genders. And so they kicked him out of class. And then afterwards, the teacher came in and was bawling him out for doing that. And so the kid recorded on the phone and posted it, and hundreds of thousands of people have viewed it. He's saying that, he says, look, my position is scientific. And the guy said, well, look, my position that I'm saying, that is coming from our school district, it's from our state, our country. We say that we have to do this, this is part of the program. He says, well, it's not scientific. And the teacher says, well, you know, a lot of our policy statements are not scientific, but you are being non-inclusive. You are discriminating people. I said, no, I'm not. I'm just stating a fact. Well, there was an argument. And so this kid was suspended from school for 5 days in Scotland for saying that there are only two sexes.
Well, this is what thought reform that people call gender confusion. And they do it by design, because when you don't have a strong sense of identity, then you're susceptible to thought reform. So they intentionally confuse a race, they intentionally confuse our gender, or sex, as you say.
Our sex.
They intentionally confuse our nationality, they want us to be globalist, they want to confuse our religion so we don't know what we believe. Because when you have a strong sense of identity, you know who you are, you know where you came from, you know where you're going, it's very difficult for you to be brainwashed. Well, the downside of that is in communist China, when they had subjects who were resistant to brainwashing, they shoot them. So, you know, you have no value to them because they can't change your mind. But this whole thing about confusion, gender confusion, it's done for a reason. The Robert J. Lofton weighs in on this, and he's, by the way, not a conservative, very liberal, left-leaning Jew, but he does study thought reform. And he weighs in heavily on this, and, you know, he did his research in China back in the 1950s. The guy is almost 100 now. But, you know, he weighs in very heavily on this. And so we got to pay very close attention when people say, hey, you need to confess your white privilege, because they're trying to get inside our heads and confuse us so that we don't know which direction is north. So whatever direction they tell us, we will believe them.
Well, you know, we've all read Eric Blair or George Orwell's 1984. Yeah. And it was kind of, an eye-opener to us what could happen. But if he had actually written what is happening today, it would be so extreme, so outlandish, that it could never have been published and never even been viewed. People would even think that it is impossible to have happened there. And so his 1984 was so much tamer than what we're actually experiencing today, it's a real eye-opener. Are you having an earthquake there?
Me?
Yeah, you're shaking.
I've got my monitor camera sitting on top of my camera, the people at home see, that every time I move, it shakes.
Okay.
But folks at home can't see it.
The last point I want to talk about on this topic is I just read, a text that someone set up. And it seems to me like it's a trolling. It's not real, but the people are taking it as real. Some parent posted this as on their YouTube channel, or what is it called, Facebook, or a text or whatever, and it talks about her AMAB, and I didn't know what AMAB is. And the name is, I guess, is Michelle, or AMAB, Michelle. I look it up, and it says assigned male at birth, meaning that it's someone that's changing. But it says, this is what she wrote. Don't you just love those weird curveballs of life that they throw at you? Or am I the only one? Smiley face, smiley face, smiley face. So this I am, whilst in the shower, my AMAB, and I'll just say Michelle, you know, it means our boy, who's who was assigned a boy at birth but is really a girl, asked me what balls are for. Now I knew instantly what she meant, but was hoping I was wrong. No such luck. She was referring to her genitalia and asked what did she mean. And I had to tell her not to worry about it, as she is a girl in a boy's body, and that those were for boys. She asked me if I knew, and I said yes, and I told her that in a couple of years she will start meds and then she won't have to worry. How am I supposed to explain balls to a six-year-old who hates her boy parts?
Well, just before we answer that question, another thought came to my mind. I mentioned Robert J. Lifton earlier, who studies thought reform, but another component he said that is evident in dangerous cults is nearly all of them have what they call sacred science. That is some tenet of their faith that they adhere to, as if it were scientific, but it's totally bogus. And you do not challenge it, or you have hell to pay. Now, this kid that you were referring to, the student in Scotland that you were referring to, he is encountering this. In other words, the school system in Scotland is effectively behaving like a dangerous cult. They are saying that gender identity is science when it's not. He's saying, no, science is there's two genders, XX and XY for the most part. But they are adhering and presenting this a spectrum of gender identity. I don't know how many there are now, probably hundreds, as if it's real, as if it's scientific, but it's not. But that really is a little bit off topic what you were asking.
Well, no, it's on topic, because what we have here is we have a woman who has a son that's treating her son as a girl, and the child is obviously quite young, just learning to develop and understand his body, and she is bound and determined to turn him into a female, and then says that in a couple of years she can make him start taking meds. And this sounds to me like a troll, and it's something I've made up, but these things happen so much. And so what's happening is you don't have Child Protective Services coming in on this one, but they'll come in on Paul's buddy and investigate that. Or you have that one situation where a family somewhere was in Minnesota, this was several years ago, they named their child Adolf Hitler Warmer or whatever like that, and the girl Eva Braun Warner, whatever the last name was, I don't know. And he went to have a cake made saying, you know, happy birthday, Adolf. And not only would the cake maker not do it, but the cake maker reported them to Child Protective Services, and Child Protective Services took the children away. And that seems to be so much milder than what this lesbian lady is trying to do to her son. It's just crazy.
Well, these systems, like the school board there in Scotland, are ruled by a fanatic ideology. And it sounds a lot like the grimmest days of the Soviet Union, where the party line would be that the latest five-year program had led to great prosperity. And then, you know, everybody who was anybody had to repeat that slogan. When in fact, you know, there's grinding poverty. There's nothing on the shelves in the stores. But you talk nonsense. This down-to-earth kid in Scotland was simply saying what, you know, previous generations, people intelligent and non-intelligent knew, that there are two genders, man and woman. That's obvious. But the official ideology is it's fluid.
Well, is there any other countries besides ours that think like this? What about the black world, the brown world, the red world, the yellow world? Do those countries, are they as extreme in this regard? Or is it only the white world, the white countries, that are so crazy?
Well, they are attacking the white Western nations for a reason, I believe. And that is because they want to undermine our culture. They want to destroy us. These other nations, they see those as kind of like the proletariat on a global scale. those are the oppressed, where we are the oppressors. They want to destroy Western white nations because globalist Marxist globalism views Western nations as the bourgeois.
We so who are is the they? Oppressors. You say they, who is they?
Well, the best way to describe they, and some people yell at me when I say this because I don't say Jews, but think of your computer has a program that's working behind the scenes, and you don't see it. You don't, some of these programs, they're running in the background. I don't even know what they are. I don't even know what they do, but they're doing something. It's obvious because it's getting done. And maybe something's getting done and there is no program. The answer to your question is, I don't know. But it's kind of like exoplanets. They can't see the planet, but they can see the effect of the planet. So they know they're there. And we can see the effect of somebody doing something. And it may be by design, it may be not by design. But they're doing something, and we know that it's there because we can see the effects. So the answer to your question is, I don't know. And having said that, somebody's going to yell at me in the chat group because I didn't say Jews.
Well, in any event, this is my take on it. It's like, you know, you have that war of 1812 where you had Naval Officer Perry sent out by Morse code or however, by pinafore, whatever he did, semaphore, that we have met the enemy and he is ours. Then you have Pogo's take on it, you know, we have met the enemy and he is us. And that's what I think. And it goes back to this Provo issue that I was talking about, the Salt Lake City issue I was talking about. The they is us. As if the they want, it's just we want. Because it's my brother, it's my sister, it's Paul's brother, and it's everybody. I don't know if people have a brother, but it's just our society that is just going down this road of, you know, what is that one phrase that I thought was really kind of phrase, it was the name of a book, slouching towards Gomorrah. That's just exactly what we're doing. We are our own selves slouching towards Gomorrah. And, you know, I don't know.
So even if there is a program working behind the scenes on our computer, the fact that we let it work, then it's our fault. So even if there is another entity out there working, whether it's the Illuminati or the communist or whoever, or the Jews, or whoever. The fact that we let them do it, ultimately, we've got to take the responsibility for that.
Yeah, the parents in that school district should descend en masse. I don't know how they operate in Scotland, but we'll see them aboard a board of education, and riot. I mean, take it, go to the next meeting and demand change. And if they don't get it, tear the place apart. I mean, this is unacceptable. They're teaching poison to the kids. It's like telling kids that they should be injecting crack cocaine, or I'm sorry, injecting heroin. It's wrong.
By the way, in Scotland, parents cannot opt out of sex ed. So in sex ed, they teach their kids that homosexuality is normal. They have classes specifically for that, and parents may not take their kids out of those classes.
So let's talk about, this is an affiliated one. It says, news channel praises 9-year-old drag queen. That's kind of the same topic that we're talking about, but just taking it from a different era, a different angle. We were talking about how the school districts were doing this, how parents were doing this. Now let's talk about the media, what they're doing. Go ahead, read that, Ken.
Yeah, this is a TV station. I think it's in Austin, Texas, not sure, abc13.com. And the thing that bothered me about this article was not just the substance of what's going on here, but the fact that the editorial perspective was very encouraging. In fact, if you don't agree with this kid, 9-year-old drag queen, then you are very unloving and you are not inclusive. Those are words that they use. And by the way, once again, Robert J. Lofton, can't remember his last name, but another thing he talked about was what he called language loading. There are some words you can use, there are some words you may not use. And one thing the leftists love to do is load language with terms like love and inclusiveness to make us feel guilty. If we're opposed to this, then we're not loving, we're inclusive. Now, to read just a couple sentences from the story so you guys get a little bit of indication of what's going on. And I'm quoting, it says, a 9-year-old living near Austin is spreading a message of love and inclusiveness as he performs as a drag queen. Kagan performs in drag as Queen Kiki. Kagan performs as Queen Kiki, a third grade teacher. Watch. Ask her class what they wanted to be when they grew up. And Kagan wrote in his memory book these words. Gender creative. 9-year-old kid, you can't tell me he thought of that on his own. Somebody has put that in his head.
Yeah.
Kagan said he can be himself when he's wearing a dress, which I guess is true, but it goes on to say it also has a message for anyone who might struggle with their identity. He said, and this is quoting Kagan, he says, I want the world to know that you can be special and you can be who you want to be. You can be a vegetarian. You can be a veterinarian. You can be LGBTQ, which always sounds to me like a sandwich. You can be a drag queen, drag king. Kagan usually goes by pronouns, he, him, and his. Notice how they get that in there. Now, one last sentence. His family says Kagan has acceptance. This is kind of addresses what I think it was Bill was talking about in Scotland. Or no, I think it was Paul. His family says Kagan has acceptance and support at a school in their conservative Christian town outside Austin. So why are they not rioting in Scotland? It's because conservatives are accepting this nonsense. Well, according to this, they are. They're supporting it. There's no outreach whatsoever. Apparently, they've been brainwashed.
Well, I have two comments on this. One is, they're using these terms, love and acceptance and inclusion and tolerance, all kind of positive terms, terms that make you popular in a high school setting, you know, and people always want to be popular when you're growing up. And so the left has had that benefit of being considered to be the popular, the good, the moral, the upright, the way you want to be. And if you were on our side of the fence, you were looked at being unpopular and geeky and evil and wrong and filled not with love but with hate. And so what we're seeing with these extreme examples is we're going to start seeing a change in perception. When people are promoting these type of vile things for young children, they're no longer going to be deemed to be popular among the rising generation. They're going to be deemed to be the unpopular ones, and that's going to cause a flood of side switch. You know, it's like when everyone rushes over to the other side of the plane, the plane will tip the other direction. Well, everyone's going to be rushing over to the other side of our philosophy, and is going to tip things quickly in another direction. That's the first point. The second point to counter that is that what's coming a lot now on the internet are these little memes where you have a beautiful family, you have a wonderful looking white mother and a white father with holding hands with little blonde children, and the meme is, look what they took away from us. Or you have a picture of a beautiful mother that's nicely conservatively dressed holding her little baby and kissing it, the baby's cooing back, and they say, look what they've taken away from us. Or you see a school with nothing but beautiful white young children learning and attentive, and they say, look what they've taken away from us, juxtaposed with the extreme ghetto atmosphere that we have in these schools today, where you have metal detectors to come in and keep people out. You have these transvestite people moving all around. So that juxtaposition is going to help sway the tide of society, where the conservatives, the mothers, the fathers are finally going to think, hey, it's popular to promote values again, and that's what's happening, going to happen, I think.
What you're talking about, I think, is called a cognitive dissonance, where they have to make a choice between what is totally bizarre and crazy and what is really normal. And the further extreme they go, the more cognitive dissonance emerges. A few years ago, I posted a photograph of the Leave It to Beaver family. on Facebook with a caption that this used to be normal. And that photograph got shared to thousands and thousands of times. That's exactly what you're talking about. By the way, I am effectively banned on Facebook. If I try to post anything on my Facebook page, they close my profile. So, you know, it's basically out of reach for me now. But, yeah, exactly what you're talking about, Bill. The crazier they get, the more sane we become. And that's kind of a good thing because people are realizing, hey, these guys aren't Nazis. They're not racist. These people are the same ones. And I think, hey, that's one of the reasons Donald Trump won the election 2016 and will probably win again in 2020. And by the way, this is one of the stories, we don't have to talk about it, but just to insert it very quickly, there was a recent poll taken by Gallup that revealed that higher than ever since they've been taking the poll, the number one concern of Americans right this minute is, guess what? It's immigration. Higher than ever. So, yeah, people, I think they're doing what you said, Bill. They're starting to respond or react by defaulting to reality.
Well, I thought many, many years ago that the Democratic Party would start turning, making a 180-degree turn and come the other direction. Because if you recall, the Democratic Party of the turn of the, in the early 1900s, the turn of the 19th century, turn of the 20th century, 1900s, it was run by William Jennings Bryan, who was an ardent Christian populist, and the Republicans were looked upon as being the ones that were out of touch with mainstream farmers and working class people. So I thought, well, again, we're going to have a turnaround. So there was a congressman, a Republican congressman in Arizona by the name of Colby, and he was one of the first homosexuals to come out openly, and he was retiring. And he's a Republican, and then I thought, and I'm originally from Arizona, well, I'll run for Congress as a Democrat, because I'll run as an extreme conservative Democrat. The Republicans will put up some sort of conservative, and the Democrats will put up some liberal or whatever, and I'll have a really good showing. And this was the same time where Gabby Gifford first got elected. I ran against her. She got elected. She's the one that got shot in Arizona as a congresswoman for a couple of times. But I ran against her, trying to get the Democratic nomination. But at that time, there was a chance for normal people as Democrats to get wide mainstream votes. Now you have such extremeness in the Democratic Party, normal people can't even consider running. And so I don't know when it's going to change, but it's sure not coming yet.
Well, let me ask you this, Bill. Why don't you or somebody of your stature run in the Democratic primary for president? So remember George Wallace? I mean, he was at least there was a little window of time in his life when he took a position to the right of center. I don't think he was truly a conservative, but it got him votes. And it worked. Yeah. First person I ever voted for was George Wallace.
I think that if somebody of a wide stature that thinks like we do were to run as a Democrat, he might get some traction, because there are so many of these former congressmen or senators or governors that are polling on the Democratic side. They've announced their candidacy. They're polling at 0%. And so if we got someone like Virgil Goode, who's a congressman from Virginia, a former one, who used to be a Democrat, then a Republican, then an independent, and then kicked out of office. If we got someone like him to run as a Democrat, I think he could get some traction.
Yeah, well, with 20 people, 20 individuals who are considered top tier, I mean, if he gets 10%, he may very well be in the top tier.
If he got 1%, he would be top tier. Because some of these top tiers only get 1%. So, yeah, if it's not too late, let's find a Virgil Goode. Virgil Goode is kind of old, but if there's, and he says he wouldn't do it. But if we can get somebody to do that, someone who has the bona fides and thinks like we do as a Democrat, then, yeah, let's put him out there and see if we can get him up to 1%, and he'll appear on the stage.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, okay. Paul, we kind of locked you out of the conversation, but...
No, I found it very interesting. And I like the idea of these creative tactics. You should try to use every party. I think there'd be at least among the white working class, or the people who sometimes will vote Republican,